For more than 150 years, the Gowanus Canal has been called a cesspool, an industrial dumping ground, and a blemish. But it's also one of the most important waterways in the history of New York Harbor. Yet its true origins, man-made character, and importance to the city have been largely forgotten. In his new book, Gowanus, Brooklynite author and journalist Joseph Alexiou shares the little-known history of the small waterway in Brooklyn. Joseph Alexiou is the author of Paris for Dummies. He is also a licensed New York City tour guide. His writing has appeared in the New York Observer, Gothamist, and New York Magazine's Daily Intel. The new book is Gowanus, and it's a pleasure to welcome Joseph Alexiou to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you so much. It's a great honor to be here.
What brought you to this particular subject of looking at a canal?
It's interesting. You know, well, I live in New York, and some people say that every story in New York is a real estate story because we have so little space down in New York City, that is. And so I moved in 2006, sort of after college, to the neighborhood, completely ignorant of the fact that there was a canal there. It just so happened that that's where the cheapest rent was, near the somewhat nicer neighborhood of Carroll Gardens. And so I get to this apartment, and the realtor says to me, "You should know there's a canal around the block, and it's supposed to be polluted, but don't worry about that." And I said, "Okay." And so I liked the apartment, and then I went down to the canal, and I said, "Where the heck am I?" Because it didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in New York, certainly. And it had all this graffiti and weird dilapidated buildings, and it was just this literal backwater. And that's where it started. I went there all the time just recreationally. I would sit near the water and read or do whatever. And as I became a journalist and as I started writing, the canal became more and more of a topic of interest to me because I discovered that it had a very long history that had never really been recorded in one place.
It stretches just under 2 miles from the upper New York Bay northward toward the area of South Brooklyn known as Carroll Gardens, as you mentioned. You talk about in the book how it began as the Gowanus Creek.
Yes.
What happened from there?
So originally the Gowanus Creek, as it was called, is a tidal estuary, which means it's this naturally occurring body of water, basically an arm of the sea that reaches inland about 2 miles, like you said. And it was surrounded by salt marshes, basically swamps. And it really didn't have any tidal movement. It went rather current flow. It moved up and down with the tide. And so that was there after colonization or in the 1620s and 30s. It was there, and it was just this flooded meadows. And so what happened was first the Dutch used it to make tide mills, so mills that used the tidal movement to grind things like ginger and grain. And then they also used it to boat on because it was fairly deep. And so it was a way to get from, you know, the inner part of Brooklyn to Manhattan by boat so you could sell your vegetables. Once Brooklyn began growing as a city, however, and this is in 1834, the area that was a swamp got in the way of the city's growth. And so this is where all the changes happened. Some engineers took a look at it, and they saw that they needed to, one, drain the fields to make any of that land usable for city. It was the Industrial Revolution, 1830s, where all kinds of modern 19th century things like steam engines were becoming, you know, it was like new technology, let's use it to better our lives. And so they said, we need a proper city sewer system. We need to drain these fields. But we still want to use this creek for navigation. Let's turn it into a canal, just like, let's say, the Erie Canal, which opened in 1825, I believe. So we're looking at the decade of canals, and that's sort of how it all happened. It happened at once. It was like, we need sewers, we need to drain these fields, and we need more commerce for our growing city. And so it took about 20 years after the 1840s when it was first proposed. But that's sort of how it became this canal, this industrial canal, that very quickly was surrounded by businesses and gas manufacturing plants, coal yards, any number of businesses which I could talk about.
Well, and let us then just jump ahead a little bit, because the canal eventually ceased operation, and this was in 1960. And at this point, it is an extremely polluted waterway.
Right. So the pollution actually does date back to as early as the 1860s. Raw sewage, sewer water, has been probably flowing into the canal since before it was a canal. But the first complaint I ever found was in 1864 of a man who had bought land next to the Gowanus Canal, and he claimed that the stench was so terrible that it killed his father-in-law. But by 1960, when the canal really shut down, it had not only taken in more than 100 years' worth of raw sewage, but it also had become a dumping site for toxic waste. So we're talking about the byproducts of manufactured gas plants, or also known as coal gasification plants, numerous chemical plants, wood treatment plants, chemical production plants like cream of tartar, but also all kinds of carcinogenic things. And the biggest polluter was coal tar, which is the byproduct of coal being produced into gas, which was the main source of energy for Brooklyn and New York and the entire country, really, up until, the turn of the century when electricity became more and more possible in everyday life and not just for rich people. And so there were three major coal gasification plants around the canal. And in fact, the canal district became known as the Gaslight District at the turn of the century because of this. And they left behind huge amounts of coal tar, heavy metals like lead, things that cause cancer. Coal tar, for example, which used to be, I should add, an ingredient in dandruff shampoo, is shown to cause cancer in all levels, and there is an average of 10 feet of toxic waste lining the bottom of the canal. And it's been that way since at least 1960, if not earlier. And this waste is 10 feet deep on average. The canal itself is, as you said, just under 2 miles long, and it is on average 100 feet wide. So that's how much toxic waste sits at the bottom, not moving.
Now, the site, which we can touch on in a moment here, the site was named a Superfund site in 2010. Yes. But if you were to look at that water right now, it's still, to use a technical scientific term, really gross.
Oh, yeah. It's really gross. And the reason why it's really gross is that still to this day, every time that it rains, and even sometimes when it's not raining, raw sewage, that is the stuff that you flush down your toilet or in your sink, flows directly into the canal, especially when it rains, but also during dry periods. And that is because the original sewer system around the canal that was built in the 1840s and 50s has never really been updated. And approximately 100,000 people live within 2 to 3 miles of the canal, and they are all within what they call the watershed, where their waste can go, or even the groundwater can go directly into the body of water. And so the grossness that you see there, anything from, feces to prophylactics and anything you might hope never to see floating in open water, you can see in the Gowanus to this day.
So meanwhile, you have it surrounded with these multi-million dollar condos and bars and restaurants and all very trendy that have come along the canal. So even though it's disgusting, it hasn't kept businesses from popping up around it.
Quite the opposite. In fact, the kind of balance that came from knowing that there was pollution and keeping the rents low allowed a huge amount of creative business and opportunities to pop up right near the canal. What you mentioned, the year 1960, when the canal ceased to be used, that definitely was the last year that the canal saw any real use for industrial purposes, especially with, like, let's say, barges. It's also the year that the Flushing Tunnel that had been built back in 1911 was damaged and shut off, and the city did nothing to restart it. So while they didn't, at some points during the early 20th century, have a little bit of flow, a little bit of oxygenation in the water to keep it somewhat barely acceptable, from 1960 until 1999, it was just a cesspool, and it stank. I mean, it was really offensive. By 1999, once they turned on the Flushing Tunnel again, it became slightly less offensive to be near as far as smells are concerned. So that made it kind of good enough for businesses to start actually being, in the area. There always were some businesses, but the smell really did keep a lot of people away. Now it's manageable, although it's certainly not gone. On a particular day, you might have like, ooh, today the canal's pretty pungent. Like, ooh, it just rained, didn't it? You know when it rained and you're walking over the canal.
It was awarded Superfund status in 2010. What does that mean, and what does that mean for the future of the canal?
Right. So Superfund is a program that's run by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency of America. And it is a national, technically it's a federal law that dictates that sites across America that are especially polluted with toxic waste that actually do have the potential to harm human beings need to be remediated, cleaned up, and taken care of. And the most well-known example and the original example of a Superfund site is the Love Canal, which is in upstate New York, of course. And it was the benchmark by which they decided, how do we deal with the industrial toxic waste left behind by our past industrial revolution, let's say, and life in America? And how do we deal with these, and what legally do we have to do to clean it up? And so in the case of the Gowanus Canal, what this means is that the EPA did many surveys and took a lot of scientific tests and collected a huge amount of data and determined that the Gowanus Canal was potentially toxically dangerous to humans and that it should be cleaned up and remediated completely. What it means on the ground is they come in, they plan a cleanup, and they execute it. And then they set up a system to collect the money to pay for that cleanup. And the way that they're going to clean up the canal starts with dredging that 10 feet of toxic waste material that I mentioned before and moving it to another place. This is going to take approximately 10 to 15 years and approximately $500 million.
And then you have that stuff, and like all of these Superfund sites, you have to figure out where to put it.
Exactly. And the worst part of it is that some of the toxic waste is so embedded in the soil itself that it can't easily be removed, at least not without billions and billions of dollars. And so the best next solution is to cap it, to try and contain it where it is and hope that it never gets out. For the stuff that does need to get removed, it's hugely expensive, and then it has to go to somewhere else. And usually that means a state that is poor needs the money the Superfund program would pay to get rid of it and store it and contain it or burn it or whatever it is they do with it. You know, and it's supposed to be ecologically safe, but it's still a problem.
So living in the midst of the GE site and the Hudson River and the dredging of the Hudson River for PCBs, this
right.
was a project that went on for decades.
I
assume this canal is headed for the same fate, that this is not going to be a quick project just to get started, not to mention the actual work.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I don't think that your logic is wrong. In fact, there's no way to predict truly how long it's supposed to take. Because, as you said, there, you know, with the project in the Hudson, you know, it took decades, and I know they came across all these problems. And, well, you know, before I address it, the Gowanus is much smaller than that area. So one of the benefits of this particular problem is that the pollution is highly concentrated, which is horrible, but it's contained in that it should be less physical labor to remove it than, say, a whole swath of the Hudson River.
Right.
That said, we have no idea what kind of problems are going to be encountered. And that, you know, is true. But I will say this. I went to an EPA conference this summer in Atlanta, because as a community member, I was there to sort of show the EPA how the community interacts with the Superfund site, which is a huge part of the program. The EPA spends a lot of time informing the local community of what changes are going to happen. And because Brooklyn is Brooklyn and New York is very concentrated, there are more members of the community around this particular Superfund site than almost any other site in the whole country. And so the EPA has a set of standards that they do to make the sort of cleanup happen, and that starts with naming it a site, and then they do years of testing, and then they start doing spot testing of their design, that is their cleanup plan, in particular areas of the canal. Basically, they do beta testing. And so right now it's 2015, and we are in the beta testing phase now. This is a layman's term. You know, we're not officially starting to remove the sludge yet, but they're testing the methods that they've laid out. And so when I was at this conference and the community coordinator told her colleagues, we started at this time and we're up to this point in the cleanup, they all gasped in surprise that we had gotten as far as we did. Now, I can't say for sure that that means that we're going to still finish cleaning up stuff very quickly in the long term. But in the short term, I'm pretty happy, and I think a lot of the community is pretty happy with how much we know about what the cleanup is meant to be. And it could have been a lot worse. Hard to say really how it's going to end up. You know, nobody can predict the future.
But you're optimistic, at least.
I feel optimistic about the EPA. And the reason for that, if you really want to know, is that they've been more transparent about what's going on with the canal than any other governmental group that I've ever interacted with.
Well, the name of the book is Gowanus, Brooklyn's Curious Canal. It's a fascinating book. It is from NYU Press. Joseph Alexiou, thank you very much for spending time with us. It's a great pleasure to speak with you, and best of luck with the book and the project.
Thank you so much for your time. It was
great.
Fantastic.
Pleasure. Thank you. Again, the name of the book is Gowanus, Brooklyn's Curious Canal. The book is published by NYU Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.